Accession number 18205, Reel 3.
Nick Hutley, Reel 3.
We dug in outside this village. So this is now our front. We sent out listening patrols. The following morning, we had to evacuate to get out quickly. Chinese had been seen. They'd come from the north. In the crossroads where I was telling you about, where the tanks went up north and we went east, they'd pushed down from the north and we've got to get back onto these crossroads, otherwise we're going to be cut off. So we gets back to the crossroads and we waited there until what people remained in the north was coming back, you know, coming back through us. When the trickle had stopped, we then pulled back to the town of Pak Chon. The Middlesex Regiment, the Argyles, and the 3rd Battalion Royal Australian Regiment. We dug in on hills by the river, by the Chog Chong River, so the river is a boundary. If they're going to come, they've got to come across the river to us. Brigade headquarters was to our rear, about a mile away. And they said, the river, that's your front. The brigade was all dug in, waiting. In the early hours of the next day, I can't remember what day it was now, but in the early hours of the next day, the Chinese crossed, but they'd crossed to our right, and down there was the American 1st Cavalry Division. They crossed, and the American Cavalry Division gave way. They pulled back. So the Chinese then advanced to the east of us and was trying to come round the back of us. So what was our front, or what was our rear, is now our front. Now Brigade Headquarters is down there. So they immediately got transport to remove Brigade Headquarters to get them out of the way. And then they decided that we was in no position to fight where we were, so we withdrew. But by this time, some of the Chinese had cut the road. And the people that opened the road for the rest of the brigade to get through was the Royal Australian Regiment. And as we went through in transport, we could actually see them crossing the paddies with fixed bayonets, you know, going in at the Chinese. And we pulled, like, more or less to the west for about 2 miles, and we took up positions again on our reels. We remained there during the night with bits and pieces of mortars and whatever, you know, happening in the general mill of a battle going on. And the following morning, we advanced again, and we retook Pak Chon, the town of Pak Chon. But the Chinese, there was no opposition. We found a lot of Chinese dead, but the Chinese had melted. They'd just disappeared. So, you know, we couldn't understand it. Why, you know, they come, they have a fight, and then they just disappear. So by this time, the whole situation up there was getting a bit, it was all getting a bit confused. And they decided that we was going to have to pull back. I mean, I've read books about this afterwards, and at the time, as a soldier, you don't know what's going on. So from Pak Chon, we withdrew back from Pak Chon, and we went to a place called Kunari, which I would suppose is about 20 mile going south. And we marched most of the way. And when we get to the Kunari, We stopped for a break, you know, because we've been marching a long way, and we came across some Turkish soldiers. Now, they thought we was French. I offered one of these Turkish soldiers a cigarette. We should get plenty of cigarettes, all American rations we was on. Used to get 20 cigarettes a day with these American rations. And I offered him this cigarette, and he said to me, "Merci," which, thank you. I said, but we're not French. I said, British. And I think he understood. And he said to me, and I'm sure he said, "Canese," which I presume to be Chinese. He said, "Canese." I said, "I don't know where Canese are." And the Turkish soldier said to me, he said, "Canese," he said. He circled all, I thought, bloody hell, all round us. We've got to get out of here a bit quick, like, you know. So apparently we got to this where we'd stopped, and our Brigadier Code, had ordered transport to get the brigade, you know, further down, you know, down the road, down south, going towards south. But the transport didn't materialise. And he realised the situation was getting a bit, you know, was getting a little bit naughty. So he decided he was going to march the brigade out through Kunari Pass, which he did do. The Argyles led with their pipers. It was an eerie situation up there. You know, we knew Chinese was about. They wasn't showing themselves. It was all, there was spasmodic machine gun fire going on all throughout the hills and everywhere. Couldn't see any of them, but we was aware of their presence there. I mean, obviously other units were fighting them, you know, American units or whatever, we didn't know. So we marched out, Argyles leading with the pipes, Australians in the middle sex bringing up the rear. And unfortunately, prior to this march happening, about a few days before, these Australians had been issued with American rubber combat boots. But they're not proper marching boots. There is a name for them, but I just can't remember. There was like an overboot, you know, to try to keep your feet warm. But you couldn't march in them. And after about 5 miles, the Australians had dropped out because their feet were bloody killing them. And as we marched through them, you can imagine what they were saying to us, weren't you? You know, their patter. I mean, I don't know if I can swear on this, but
yes,
they were saying, "Oh, you pummy bastards, we know you've had enough, but you still keep walking. Sit down with us. Give your feet a rest." And when our reply was, "I thought you were supposed to be bleeding tough, you Aussies. Get up and bloody march." You know, battling like that was going on. But they were good fellas, the Australians. Anyway, so we continue marching. And eventually, transport appeared. But what they done, they decided they'd pick up the rear columns first, who was the Australians. Then they picked them up, dropped them into an arbouring area, then came back for us. We was in the middle. The middle six was, you know, was in the middle of the brigade. Picked us up, and as we'd gone through the Argyles, the poor old Argyles, they'd been leading all the way. They'd done more marching than any of us. Of course, they was, you can imagine what they were shouting at us. What about us, you bloody, we've been marching longer than you. So it won't be long, Jock, we won't be long, the transport will be coming back. And anyway, that's where we got through Kunari Pass, and according to the book that I read, they reckon we marched about 25 miles to get out. You know, I can only talk about my own company. When we got off this transport, it was American transport, 2.5 tonners, we was dumped in this field. They like to call it an arbouring area. And of course, we were shattered, you know, we was really bloody shattered. And we just get down and get in the field and we just lay down. We just want to go to sleep. And then it must have been about, as far as my memory can, you know, go, it must have been about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. We was all woken up. And get saddled up, let's get your equipment on. And all we used to carry was we used to carry a bedding roll a small pack, two Bren pouches, your rifle and bayonet, water bottle, 100 rounds of ammunition round your chest, and two grenades. That was your equipment. Excuse me. They said we've got to march up to the southern end of the pass. They said because there's an American infantry regiment up there that's been caught in the Chinese roadblock. And they said, we've got to go up there and we've got to keep the southern end of the pass open so that the Americans can come through. Because what they didn't want was for the Chinese to cut off the southern end so it would stop any Americans coming through. So we all thought, well, this is bloody good, isn't it? We've only just got to march. We just had no sleep. We've got to march up the road. And up the road we go. Come across the jeep with an American colonel and a sergeant, both been shot in the head. That was a mystery. That was a complete mystery. Anyway, continue marching, and all of a sudden, some American jeeps come through with their officers in it, I might add, just their officers, and obviously, you know, PFCs driving it, but mainly their officers. They swept past us. They're heading south. We're heading north. And we get up to the southern end of Coonery Pass, and in front of us, we can see the pass coming down like that. And the American unit that was up there was a part of the American 2nd Division. It was the 9th Infantry Regiment. And an American Infantry Regiment is equivalent to a British brigade. It's got three battalions in a regiment, you know, plus their support, their artillery and, you know, and all the other, and the tanks and all the bits and pieces that go with it. Well, I did feel sorry for them because it was very high banked. The pass, you had the pass, it was very high banked. They called in airstrike, and we're looking at it. You know, it's like being in a cinema watching what's going on. I mean, we couldn't get up there because apparently the orders were to our CO was to go up there, keep the pass open as much as you can, but don't get heavily engaged because there's no backup behind you. You must not get heavily engaged. The Americans called in airstrikes, but it was so steep that they couldn't get down, you know, they couldn't get into the Chinese. And all the American transports coming down through this pass, they just knocked it all out. And I can't understand why a lot of these tanks that came through first, you know, if they'd have kept some of them, a lot of their transport, the tanks could have knocked it off the side of the road to allow the... Well, to be quite honest, you know, I don't want to say too much about it, but it was a bit of a shambles. It was a bit of a shambles. But they got away. They had a lot of casualties up there that night, infantry regiment, but I feel perhaps they may have been let down by their officers. I don't really know. I wouldn't like to make an opinion about it. I suppose they'd done the best they could under the situation. And apparently, you know, the Chinese is no mug. When we passed through there in the early hours of the morning, they was up in position then. But they didn't want us. We were on foot. You know, if they're after bigger game. They knew what was coming afterwards. They knew there was more mechanised stuff coming out afterwards. They let us go through. I think if they had have opened up on us, then we would have probably stood a bit of a chance of having a go at them. Because we were all on foot. Although it would have meant going up big hills either side. We wouldn't have been such an easy prey as the Americans that was coming through. So that was, you know, that was a bit of a disaster up there, and it is a bit of a disaster with the, you know, with the American 2nd Division. You know, I feel something that it could have been, it possibly could have been avoided. And then from there, when the trickle stopped coming through. There was a little village by the side of the hills where we were, a little tiny village, with a... I forget the... What they call it now.
A track.
Pardon?
A track.
No, it was a... There is a name for it. It was an inlet in the hill, you know.
A valley?
Well, like a little valley, but a re-entrant. They had these American three-tonners, two-and-a-half-tonners in this re-entrant because there we're coming under stick now. We're getting malted, and you know we're you know they're having a go at us. We're in my particular company had quite a number of wounded up there, and that's without the other companies. A company that was further up to the left, as they pulled back, some of their blokes was having hand to hand fighting with the Chinese. A company. Anyway, we came back into this, my particular company, came back into this re-entrant. You can only talk about your own company. You're not aware of what other companies are doing. We came back into this re-entrant. There was American 2.5 tonners there with Negro drivers. We got on them. We came out of the re-entrant onto the road, and then we're surrounded. But the machine gun fire was absolutely diabolical. The Chinese was on the hills above us and everywhere. And they was really giving us some, you know. But the Americans, we got away. Those American trap drivers are something else, those Negroes. We was driving, to keep off the main road, we was driving through villages. They was knocking little houses down, to get off the main road. And anyway, we got away. And then after that, it was just pulling back all the time. And the first time we came across the 29th Brigade that came out there in November of 1950, that was the 29th Brigade, was the Gloucesters, Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, and the Royal Ulster Rifles, plus their armour. We're leaving the north in any transport we could get hold of. Sometimes we was marching, sometimes we was holding, you know, to make sure that the Chinese wasn't pushing too far. But when we came to Pyongyang, the outskirts of Pyongyang, that's when we first come across the 29th Brigade. They was all dressed in their camouflage smocks. They got all the lovely equipment. And I don't know if they're aware of it, but we used to call them the Phantoms. And the reason we called them the Phantoms, it was a bit unkind, really, because we never used to bloody see them. We used to say, this 29th Brigade? They're supposed to be here to relieve us. This is the modern British Brigade. Where are they? I mean, our equipment was, what we had was bloody diabolical compared to what they had. And so they got the nickname the Phantoms, because nobody see them. But anyway, we got to Pyongyang, and we didn't actually go into the town. We were on the outskirts of it, on the MSR, the main supply route. And we come, that was our Rolsters or Gloucesters that we came across. And we said, who are you, mate? They said, we're 29th Brigade. They said, you 27th Brigade? We said, yeah. Oh, bloody God, I'm glad you got back, they said. Mate, glad to see you. They said, everything's gone through here. Everything's gone through. They said, you're the last people coming out. They said, are you all right for rations? We said, no, we've got no bloody rations. So they gave us bags of sugar. And we said, where do you get this from? They said, we got it out in the warehouse in Pyongyang. The Americans are burning a lot. All their equipment and all their clothing, he said, they're burning a lot because they don't want it to fall into the hands of the Chinese. So we left the 29th Brigade there, and then on and on and on we went further back, and we finished up at a place called Yujongbu, this side of Seoul. And that's where we had Christmas 1950. And we built little shacks there. Everything's quiet, you know. There's nothing going on. The Chinese are still up. They're still coming down, but they're taking their time. And we called it Shantytown, this place at Yujongbu, and it was, I'll say, it was Christmas 1950. The officers come around and waited on us, you know, because it was Christmas, part of the old army business. We got food parcels from people back in the UK, which was good. Always remember one firm down in Vauxhall, Kennington, a lift company, Benny Lifts was the name of the firm. They'd obviously had a big collection there from the women and the men there, and they sent out, you know, quite a lot of stuff to us. I often thought when I came back was to go round and thank them people, but never did. So we had a pretty good Christmas there under the conditions. And then early January, the Chinese appear again. And it was the Ulsters that took the brunt of that, a place called, well, we know it as Compo Canyon, and they call it Happy Valley. But they had a big fight with the Chinese up there, had many casualties of Royal Ulster Rifles. And then we pulled back, you know, my brigade pulled back through Saul. Saul was a light, smashed up to pieces. It's already been taken once. Now it was going to be retaken again. And we finished up at a place called, eventually we finished up at a place called Yeoju, which is well south of a place called Suwon, which is it's quite a way, you know, south. I suppose it's about three quarters of the way down the Korean Peninsula, so we've been pushed back a long way. During this time, General MacArthur had been sacked, and we had a new general takeover, Ridgway. And he fought in a different way. Prior to Ridgway coming there, MacArthur was the overall commander, but his field commander was a man called Walker, General Walker. And apparently he was a protege of Patton, General Patton. He was Patton's 2IC. And Patton, you know, in Europe, he was all tanks, push tank, you know, push armour through. And I think a lot of this was Walker's idea, because in the beginning, we never went up any hills, not unless they was up there, but we was always down the main road. You know, they never cleared any hills. We did, the British did, but the Americans did. They just went down the main road. But when Ridgway took over, he altered it. It wasn't big punches of armour going down the road. We was going to go forward, but we was going to go forward as a complete front. You know, over that we was going to take the hills. We was going to clear the lot. As I say, we was at this place, Yeoju. The Chinese were pretty close, and in February, I think I've read in a book there, Ridgway called it Operation Killer. And the line started to move forward again. That American division that I told you about, that was caught up the north, that was to the right of us, at a place called Wonju. We was at Yeoju. At any rate, we start to push forward again, and in our brigade, which was a fair idea, when you was pushing forward, you'd have the Argyles do it on a Monday, would go forward, would be the forward battalion. On Tuesday it'd be the Australians, and on Wednesday it'd be the Middlesex, so that everybody had their share of going of leading, you know, the brigade. So if you come into trouble, you know, you was unlucky, you bumped it first. Sometimes you missed it, then the other battalion, the next, you know, so it made everything, they brought it on a fair, you know, basis. This was as we was going forward. And in February, I think in that book there, it says the 14th of February, Ridgway started this Operation Killer. We crossed the Arne, the River Arne, which was only like, as it comes down from Saw, it's not very wide. But we crossed that, the old battalion, and my particular company, we're up on the hills in this valley to the left, and we're going along, and down on the valley floor, some Americans come down, American Negroes, and they're waving these leaflets, and apparently, the Chinese had given to them as a joke. They were pamphlets that the United Nations had dropped to the Chinese, and the Chinese had given back to the Americans as jokes, good conduct passes. Prior to moving up there, about a day before we took up this advance, this American 2nd Division, I think they sent up, I'm not sure it was as big as a regimental combat team, but they sent a force up towards a place called Chip Young, where another French, where a French battalion was up there, and the American 23rd Regiment, which was part of the 2nd Division. And they was isolated, but they was holding out. So you had, if I can describe, you had Chip Young here, you had the rest of the line down here, and they was holding out on their own. This American regiment with a French battalion. So the Americans' 2nd Battalion, 2nd Division that was down in Wanzhou sent up a reconnaissance team to see if they could locate the and find out the situation, the position, what was happening at Chip Young. Well, they'd sent them out, never heard nothing from them. So going on from what I said, as we were marching up this broadest valley, these Americans that the Chinese had given the good conduct passes to was part of this regimental combat team. And it wasn't a peculiar situation as such, but you got the floor of the valley, you got the hills either side, but in the middle there was another big hill feature. It looked like an island in the middle of the sea, if you know what I mean. It was a big hill feature. And the Chinese was there. They was digging in on there. So the battalion noticed that they was digging in. They called down artillery, shelled them, whatever. The company that was on the valley floor went in, took the positions off the Chinese after a bit of a fight. We was up on the hills to the left. We mortared this little position, and it was big enough, this hill was big enough for the whole of the battalion to get on. So we took over this hill feature. We had 100% stand to, because it was a bit of a dodgy situation. I mean, bearing in mind, by the time we took this hill, it was getting dark, so you've got to dig in, you've got to lay down telephone wires, you know, you've got to get all the communications of the battalion going. And normally, when the Chinese used to attack you, they'd attack you 2 hours before first light. They very rare they would attack you in daylight. You could attack them, but they wouldn't attack you. This was in the situation where we was there, you know, in the early part of the war, as opposed to the layers that went afterwards. Because if they attacked you during the daylight, we had the advantage on them. We could call down airstrike. So what they used to do is, I was going to attack you, they'd attack you 2 hours before first light, and hoping they would be able to take that position and consolidate it, you know, before daylight comes. So we took up position, and about 12 o'clock, we had 50% staying to up to about 12 o'clock, midnight, and then after that, we had 100% staying to. That means all the battalion is awake. And then about 4 o'clock in the morning, they attacked us, the Chinese. They wanted this position with their old bugles. Are you British? They were shouting out, are you British? I can't remember if they was being replied to or anything, but I should imagine they was. There must have been a few swear words going on. Anyway, they attacked till first light.